Into this silence we bring our hearts. Into this space we bring our bodies. Into this community we bring our minds. We come with questions. We come with needs and wants and desires. We come for comfort. We come to be challenged. We come to be loved. We come to be understood. We come to be inspired, to find courage. We come seeking support because this world needs communities of strength and love and bonding. This world needs voices, voices out there in this world that can speak the truth as we know it with love and respect. This world needs hands and feet that can go out and offer our love with practical and beauty and the work that lies ahead. We come together. We send our thoughts and our prayers to all those who are hurting, and we send our inspiration to all those who feel joy. May we spread it with every word and deed into this world. Amen. I invite you to bring your voices together and remain seated for 1023, Building Bridges. We'll sing it twice through. I have such gratitude to be standing here once again, such gratitude for the 10 years that we spent together in community, gratitude for the invitation to return. Thank you, Josh, for making that happen. My memories of Meadville and our formation together is beyond words in so many ways. And I'm just delighted to see you all here this morning, and I know you all could have slept in. I appreciate that very, very much. So as I said, I serve the Mount Vernon Unitarian Church. It's just outside Alexandria, Virginia, the center of the universe, as some like to say, in Washington, D.C. Things are very interesting these days. I'm never bored. I am never bored. But I have been focusing the last 5 years or so specifically on the youth and the young adults in my community because I feel so strongly that this is the future of our faith. And as all denominations across our country right now are experiencing significant changes, and some of the mainline Protestant churches, they're hemorrhaging with their membership. Unitarian Universalists, we're not hemorrhaging, but we're not growing either. And I think it's just so important that we really pay attention to our youth and our young adults. So I dedicated my ministry and my Doctor of Ministry studies that I just completed at the Virginia Theological Seminary. So I want to share what I found in those studies, what my youth and young adults taught me, essentially. And as you heard their voices, part of my study was that I did extensive interviews with them before and after this project that we did together. And I begin the story with the annual worship service that they did about a year and a half ago. It was in February. And in this service, they decided, this is just the youth. The youth were doing the service supported by some young adults. And in the service, they decided that this was the moment in their church year that they were going to lay out all the struggles that they had with life, and in particular, the church. They're Kvetch of the year for many intensive purposes. It was an interesting service. We had interesting reactions from people. But one of the things that several of the youth said was that, you know, we are struggling with things like permission slips. Why do we need so many permission slips for everything we have to do around at this church? What's that all about? What happens to, you know, spontaneity? And then they struggled because we put restrictions on them for playing a game called Cards Against Humanity. Now, for those of you who may not be aware about Cards Against Humanity, after the service, I invite you to Google it. And the easiest way to sum up, it's a card game, and on the cards are questions and statements that are intentionally offensive. They're racist, they're sexist, they're genderist, they push people's buttons, and they pretty much are there intentionally to be politically incorrect. And we put some restrictions on when they could play in that game, like not during any church events that involve this church property and people. That kind of restriction. And they're like, why? So they, you know, so it was kind of a litany of why church is difficult for them right now. And a couple of them said, what we really need is adult training camp. And I'm sitting there going, this is it. This is adult training camp. All of you, all of these people, all ages, this is adult training camp. And the good news is there's no final exams. The bad news is nobody graduates. This is it, folks. I feel like the purpose of adult training camp, whether you're youth, a young adult, or you're in your 90s, is to enhance the potential of each person. To enhance the potential of each person, to learn to trust ourselves and our inner voices, and learn to trust each other as well. This is so important in life, but I think it's particularly difficult for our youth and our young adult when you start to think about the challenges and the barriers that they face throughout their life. And I know some of you, you talked about, you have kids out there who have graduated from college and they're trying, you know, this is not an easy time to be a youth or a young adult in so many ways. They face multiple and complex transitions during what I think is a unique developmental time that it really spans 20 years. Really spans about 20 years through high school into around the age of mid-30s, about 35. The UUA defines young adults as 18 to 35. And or they're also sometimes young adults, they're called emerging adults. There's a whole emerging adult focus these days. So I wanted to focus my doctoral work on this and start to recognize, how does a liberal church like ours support our youth and young adults? We have so much competition with social media in the 21st century typical lifespan. And here we are trying to get people's attention and say, this is important. And they may or may not realize it as we're competing with school and transitions and jobs. How do we support them in that's appropriate, inviting them into deep reflection about their faith and about their values? How do we help support them in their religious identity? As Unitarian Universalists, is it secure? Is it deep? As they're navigating adolescence and into adulthood, how important is the Unitarian Universalist Church to them? Young adults, as we heard from Mike, they're going into the job market. They're establishing a social network in a transitory world. They're starting to do taxes. When I graduated from college, nobody was there, and I screwed up my taxes. I had the IRS on my tail in no time. I was really impressed how quickly they figured out. They're managing debt. They're buying houses if they can in some areas of the country that's next to impossible. They're trying to manage having children, often with two parents working. And through all of this, have the youth, have our Unitarian young adults, have they spent much time and energy on their religious identity? Are they committed as Unitarian Universalists? Do they identify even as Unitarian Universalists? Do they have a need to even connect with a spiritual community? As you heard one of the voices, one of my young adults was like, I don't know if I need you guys. I don't know if I need anybody. And that scares her, as it should. Is there a church there for them? Are they there for the church, ready to give in service, to feel prepared to go into the larger community? And in that larger community, can they articulate their beliefs and their values and how they view the world in the very pluralistic world that's with heightened emotionalism and religious judgment? In the world of competing interests and all that emotional change as adolescents and then as young adults and then as parents, what is their relationship with their Unitarian Universalist Church? I think all of us, of course, we've all gone through this at some point in our time, but we have to admit each generation is facing its own unique issues. And we all have to incorporate all the cultural and societal influences in our lives. You might call it fragments of meaning that hit us at heightened speeds every time we turn on our smartphone or a laptop or computer, or for those who still watch television. All those fragments of meaning are swimming around in our subconscious, and it's so important to raise our awareness about them and figure out how they incorporate into who we are as a religious person. Again, I think adult training camp is about enhancing the potential of each person, helping them learn to trust themselves and each other. And I learned this from my youth group when I met with them a few weeks after that interesting worship service to talk about their grievances. And we talked about things like they conveyed permission slips. And we talked about, yes, how do you balance? We know where you are and you're safe. And more importantly, if you're on a church event and your parent wants to know where you are, we actually need to know where you are. And how do you want to open it up to spontaneity? We also talked about Cards Against Humanity. And as they said, pros and cons, is this game offensive? And I talked about power, that if you have, say, a freshman in high school, who we don't know maybe their full story, maybe they're African American, maybe at some point they've experienced abuse or oppression. How do they feel safe when they're playing a card game that isn't feeling safe? We talked about the responsibility of classism and judgment, and is it funny when you're talking about transgender issues and somebody's struggling with who they are and their gender and their sexuality? And then they said, well, yeah, we can get how this can be offensive. Yeah, we can get how some people may be laughing outside but not inside. And then one of them said, but how do we learn? How do we learn to talk about these difficult issues? What if we go off to college and we walk into a room and they're playing Cards Against Humanity and they all agreed that was a high probability? How do we learn to talk about these really difficult issues in a sane and civilized way, and still have some fun along the path? So we negotiated a deal that they could play the game as long as one of the advisors was there and that anybody had permission to talk about the cards themselves. Anybody could raise, why is this so mean? Why am I feeling uncomfortable? They had to create a safe environment while they talked about really uncomfortable things. And I was so appreciative of their wisdom because they realized out there in this world, they still need to have intellectual rigor in this world, that they need to be able to talk in this pluralistic world about theological constructs like evil and suffering and heaven and hell and salvation. They need to talk about classism and ageism and genderism. They need to be able to say, this is who I am and this is what I believe and why. And then ask, what do you believe and why? I was so impressed with their wisdom. All of this goes to what is really essentially called spiritual formation and their religious identity. And our churches, if we do anything right, it is supporting their spiritual formation, who they are as they grow older. So that's why I focus so much on this doctoral work. So I created a special curriculum for my youth, and I combined them with my young adults as mentors in mentoring relationship, because it's so important to have somebody there to walk with you on the journey. Now, my intent was to deepen their Unitarian Universalist identity, to help them learn to articulate and what they believe. And I went with four areas, which I found were really crucial, four areas that I could actually measure, and that is their values, their sense of life purpose, their world view. That is, do they view the world as someplace safe and positive, or is it someplace negative and scary, or is it neutral and chaotic? And finally, their beliefs, or what in the theologically world is called theodicy. Isn't that a great new word? You can take that home, theodicy, which basically means judgment by the world or God. So four areas of values, life purpose, their worldview, and their theodicy. And I chose those four areas because there's a national study done by my advisor, and I could compare our youth to U.S. general population of young adults. Who are we in comparison to the rest of the world? Well, at least the rest of the U.S. So going in, the first thing I assumed when I asked them open-ended questions in our interviews was general questions about what principles guide you in life. Now, they've been raised with the principles and purposes, right? So I assumed that they would start to pull on that. No. One mentioned the principles and purposes. And here we do it. We translate them into childlike language. We bring them up into services, into their lesson plans. One of them referenced it. And at first, I was devastated. I thought, how could this be? And then it hit me. All the studies indicate that relationships in their formation process is more important than static text. They want to be in relationship with each other. And this was the perfect example. That relationships in their mentoring involves dialogue and reflection and a personal contact and that influence on who they are. So a couple other things that I found. Neither youth nor the young adults ever described themselves as a humanist or a secular humanist. These are not the 20th century Unitarian Universalists that so many of us grew up with. They are not. They are used to pluralism. The word humanist is virtually meaningless. I found that Unitarian Universalist young adults and their worldview, how they look at the world, is more positive than the youth. The youth were more cynical. Not a surprise there. All that hormones swimming around, not a big surprise. But both the youth and young adults, they're more positive than the general U.S. population of young adults. That I found intriguing. And for their theodicy or their beliefs, their views and nature about God, both youth and young adults are less theologically deterministic. That means they don't really believe in a deterministic God who directs traffic around the world. For them, which is the U.S. norm, but not for Unitarian Universalists. They're more likely to believe in a random or human intervention. One of my youth, Allie, said, things happen for a reason, not because of a higher power, but for a mathematic or logic. Things can be explained by causation, she declared. Now, I also found that the UU youth, they define their life purpose, of course, through career choices. You're in high school. What do you want to be when you grow up? Don't ask them what college they're going to, particularly in the junior and senior year. That it just adds stress to their life. It's just, don't go there. But the young adults, by the time they've graduated, they're in careers, they define their life purpose through relationship. Through their network, their social network. Within the larger population of U.S. young adults, this is interesting, no clear sense of life purpose at all. Interesting. And finally, about values. The predominant among UU youth and young adults is what's called eudaimonic values. Eudaimonic, another great word to take home with you. Life happiness, in other words, a well-being, is done through expressions of improving ourselves, as opposed to hedonistic or pleasure-oriented. It suggests that happiness is improved. Our happiness is tied to how we self-improved rather than through pleasure-oriented. And within the larger U.S. population, there's definitely stronger trends toward hedonism and consumerism. Interesting. That's our youth and young adults. As one of my young adults said, placing life's goal toward accumulating things doesn't bring lasting happiness. It often leaves emptiness. Wisdom. So this is what I confirmed. It wasn't a surprise, but it was more than just theory. Our Unitarian Universalist youth and young adults exist, like most UUs, outside of the predominant theological norm of the population in this country. That's in their theology, their values, and their worldview. Less sure about life purpose, but they do have a sense of where they want to go. That vision of this adult training camp, engaging, supportive, challenging, totally awesome UU church community, that's what I want to see. Core part of their life experience. To pursue that potential within each of us, learning to trust our inner voice and who we are, learning to trust each other, and knowing that when we stumble, we actually improve ourselves. Intentionally inviting each other into cross-generational relationships, that's what I want to see in this vision, that we intentionally invite people in and be in relationship, mentoring, friendship, walking with each other through our joys and sorrows. That's why I created those mentoring relationships. And yes, they still need a youth group where they can be together, or a young adult group, but they also need to be integrated into the larger community. They need and want to be of service to others, but what's clear is they may not know how to do it. They need somebody to help them, help show how to really extend ourselves. And since they fall outside of the U.S. norm, I want them to know that their church is a safe haven, that they can come here and, well, if they need to, play Cards Against Humanity and feel challenged and safe at the same time. I want them to feel the power of community, of relationship to others. When I was defending my thesis on March 30th, one of my readers asked one final question. And she said, if you died tomorrow, what did you want them to know? And I said, I want them to know that they're loved and that they believe in the first principle, that they have inherent worth and dignity. And I thought, and I also want them to be a Unitarian Universalist because I trust them, because I trust you. Our future of our faith is in your hands. And I trust you with it. And that excites me. Blessed be and amen.